Chapter 1. Childhood. Abandoned and Chosen. The Adoption. When Paul Jobs was mustered out of the Coast Guard after World War II, he made a wager with his crewmates. They had arrived in San Francisco, where their ship was decommissioned, and Paul bet that he would find himself a wife within 2 weeks. He was a taut, tattooed engine mechanic, 6 feet tall, with a passing resemblance to James Dean. But it wasn't his looks that got him a date with Clara Hagopian, a sweet-humored daughter of Armenian immigrants. It was the fact that he and his friends had a car, unlike the group she had originally planned to go out with that evening. 10 days later, in March 1946, Paul got engaged to Clara and won his wager. It would turn out to be a happy marriage, one that lasted until death parted them more than 40 years later. Paul Reinhold Jobs had been raised on a dairy farm in Germantown, Wisconsin. Even though his father was an alcoholic and sometimes abusive, Paul ended up with a gentle and calm disposition under his leathery exterior. After dropping out of high school, he wandered through the Midwest, picking up work as a mechanic, until at age 19, he joined the Coast Guard, even though he didn't know how to swim. He was deployed on the USS General M.C. Meigs and spent much of the war ferrying troops to Italy for General Patton. His talent as a machinist and fireman earned him commendations, but he occasionally found himself in minor trouble and never rose above the rank of seaman. Clara was born in New Jersey, where her parents had landed after fleeing the Turks in Armenia, and they moved to the Mission District of San Francisco when she was a child. She had a secret that she rarely mentioned to anyone. She had been married before, but her husband had been killed in the war. So when she met Paul Jobs on that first date, she was primed to start a new life. Like many who lived through the war, they had experienced enough excitement that when it was over, they desired simply to settle down, raise a family, and lead a less eventful life. They had little money, so they moved to Wisconsin and lived with Paul's parents for a few years, then headed for Indiana, where he got a job as a machinist for International Harvester. His passion was tinkering with old cars, and he made money in his spare time buying, restoring, and selling them. Eventually, he quit his day job to become a full-time used car salesman. Clara, however, loved San Francisco, and in 1952, she convinced her husband to move back there. They got an apartment in the Sunset District facing the Pacific, just south of Golden Gate Park, and he took a job working for a finance company as a repo man, picking the locks of cars whose owners hadn't paid their loans and repossessing them. He also bought, repaired, and sold some of the cars, making a decent enough living in the process. There was, however, something missing in their lives. They wanted children, but Clara had suffered an ectopic pregnancy in which the fertilized egg was implanted in a fallopian tube rather than the uterus, and she had been unable to have any. So by 1955, after 9 years of marriage, they were looking to adopt a child. Like Paul Jobs, Joanne Schaible was from a rural Wisconsin family of German heritage. Her father, Arthur Schaible, had immigrated to the outskirts of Green Bay, where he and his wife owned a mink farm and dabbled successfully in various other businesses, including real estate and photo engraving. He was very strict, especially regarding his daughter's relationships, and he had strongly disapproved of her first love, an artist who was not a Catholic. Thus, it was no surprise that he threatened to cut Joanne off completely when, as a graduate student at the University of Wisconsin, she fell in love with Abdul Fattah John Jandali, a Muslim teaching assistant from Syria. Jandali was the youngest of 9 children in a prominent Syrian family. His father owned oil refineries and multiple other businesses, with large holdings in Damascus and Homs, and at one point pretty much controlled the price of wheat in the region. His mother, he later said, was a traditional Muslim woman who was a conservative, obedient housewife. Like the Schaeble family, the Jundalis put a premium on education. For generations, members of the family had gone to Istanbul or the Sorbonne to study. Abdul Fattah was sent to a Jesuit boarding school, even though he was Muslim, and he got an undergraduate degree at the American University in Beirut before entering the University of Wisconsin to pursue a doctoral degree in political science. In the summer of 1954, Joanne went with Abdul Fattah to Syria. They spent 2 months in Homs, where she learned from his family to cook Syrian dishes. When they returned to Wisconsin, she discovered that she was pregnant. They were both 23, but they decided not to get married. Her father was dying at the time, and he had threatened to disown her if she wed Abdul Fattah. Nor was abortion an easy option in a small Catholic community. So in early 1955, Joanne traveled to San Francisco, where she was taken into the care of a kindly doctor who sheltered unwed mothers, delivered their babies, and quietly arranged closed adoptions. Joanne had one requirement. Her child must be adopted by college graduates. So the doctor arranged for the baby to be placed with a lawyer and his wife. But when a boy was born on February 24, 1955, the designated couple decided that they wanted a girl and backed out. Thus it was that the boy became the son not of a lawyer, but of a high school dropout with a passion for mechanics and his salt-of-the-earth wife, who was working as a bookkeeper. Paul and Clara named their new baby Stephen Paul Jobs. When Joanne found out that her baby had been placed with a couple who had not even graduated from high school, she refused to sign the adoption papers. The standoff lasted weeks, even after the baby had settled into the Jobs household. Eventually, Joanne relented, with the stipulation that the couple promise, indeed sign a pledge, to fund a savings account to pay for the boy's college education. There was another reason that Joanne was balky about signing the adoption papers. Her father was about to die, and she planned to marry Jundali soon after. She held out hope, she would later tell family members, sometimes tearing up at the memory, that once they were married, she could get their baby boy back. Arthur Schaeble died in August 1955, after the adoption was finalized. Just after Christmas that year, Joanne and Abdul Fattah were married in St. Philip the Apostle Catholic Church in Green Bay. He got his Ph.D. in international politics the next year, and then they had another child, a girl named Mona. After she and Jundali divorced in 1962, Joanne embarked on a dreamy and peripatetic life that her daughter, who grew up to become the acclaimed novelist Mona Simpson, would capture in her book Anywhere But Here. Because Steve's adoption had been closed, it would be 20 years before they would all find each other. Steve Jobs knew from an early age that he was adopted. "My parents were very open with me about that," he recalled. He had a vivid memory of sitting on the lawn of his house when he was 6 or 7 years old, telling the girl who lived across the street. "So does that mean your real parents didn't want you?" the girl asked. "Lightning bolts went off in my head," according to Jobs. "I remember running into the house crying, and my parents said, 'No, you have to understand.' They were very serious and looked me straight in the eye. They said, 'We specifically picked you out.' Both of my parents said that and repeated it slowly for me, and they put an emphasis on every word in that sentence." Abandoned, chosen, special. Those concepts became part of who Jobs was and how he regarded himself. His closest friends think that the knowledge that he was given up at birth left some scars. I think his desire for complete control of whatever he makes derives directly from his personality and the fact that he was abandoned at birth, said one longtime colleague, Del Yoakum. He wants to control his environment and he sees the product as an extension of himself. Greg Calhoun, who became close to Jobs right after college, saw another effect. "Steve talked to me a lot about being abandoned and the pain that caused," he said. "It made him independent. He followed the beat of a different drummer, and that came from being in a different world than he was born into." Later in life, when he was the same age his biological father had been when he abandoned him, Jobs would father and abandon a child of his own. He eventually took responsibility for her. Chris Ann Brennan, the mother of that child, said that being put up for adoption left Jobs full of broken glass, and it helps to explain some of his behavior. "He who is abandoned is an abandoner," she said. Andy Hertzfeld, who worked with Jobs at Apple in the early 1980s, is among the few who remained close to both Brennan and Jobs. "The key question about Steve is why he can't control himself at times from being so reflexively cruel and harmful to some people," he said. "That goes back to being abandoned at birth. The real underlying problem was the theme of abandonment in Steve's life." Jobs dismissed this. "There's some notion that because I was abandoned, I worked very hard so I could do well and make my parents wish they had me back or some such nonsense, but that's ridiculous," he insisted. "Knowing I was adopted may have made me feel more independent, but I have never felt abandoned. I've always felt special. My parents made me feel special." He would later bristle whenever anyone referred to Paul and Clara Jobs as his adoptive parents or implied that they were not his real parents. "They were my parents, 1,000%, he said. When speaking about his biological parents, on the other hand, he was curt. "They were my sperm and egg bank. That's not harsh. It's just the way it was. A sperm bank thing. Nothing more."